Dr. Kaufman. Our next speaker is now Dr. Rebecca Feuer, who's a professor here in the department, the immediate past chair, and also the director of the MSCPH program at McGill University. Dr. Feuer's research is focused on social determinants of mental health, in particular gender, social integration, and social position. And so please help me in welcoming Dr. Feuer, who will be talking about epidemiologic research on mental disorders at McGill, reflections on our 50-year lifespan trajectory. Thank you.
Thank you for that lovely introduction. So Mike Kramer has just finished illustrating the significant contributions to perinatal and child health epidemiology over the past 35 years at least. And Jay Kaufman has told us about the present commitment to policy research using epidemiological approaches. And Tina Wolfson will be talking about aging, but I don't know what you're going to be saying, so I can't comment on that. My goal is to share some data with you, and I would like us to reflect on the department's role in research on mental disorders or psychiatric epidemiology and what we have done and what we haven't done in this department in this area of high population health impact. So I'd like us to, at the end, to be able to explore the findings and whether or not we should address the situation for the future. So just very quickly, what are mental and behavioral disorders, psychiatric disorders, neuropsychiatric disorders? I'm using nomenclature that people use interchangeably to mean the same thing and don't use at times to mean different things. Just a very quick definition for those of you who are not familiar with the nomenclature from a more clinical or from an epidemiological perspective. Mental disorders conceptualized, and you can read it, as a clinically significant behavior and psychological syndrome. There are symptoms. There's pain. Pain can be as acute as physical pain. No one ever talks about that. And how do we define a case? We don't have lab tests for most psychiatric or mental health disorders. There are distinctive features, however, that are used in the diagnostic process, and they're related to thoughts, behaviors, feelings, et cetera, et cetera. And why would we want to study the causes? To understand more about these pathologies for primary prevention purposes, early diagnosis and treatment, if that's plausible, cure or chronicity, and the handling, organization of health services. And I could go on. The burden of disease. Mental illness accounts for 4 out of 10 leading causes of years of life lost to disability in the world. In the next couple of slides, I'm just going to show you the same message, but graphically. Depression affects probably approximately 300 million people worldwide. And that's less than 50% of those have access to appropriate treatment and health care. And you'll see in just a moment, we'll be talking about this at a global level. We often think that these are diseases of the wealthier societies, and they are not. Schizophrenia and other psychoses affects approximately 21 million people worldwide. And in many countries, there are no services available for them. So to show you that the range of schizophrenia incidence is about 10 to 40 per 100,000 per year. As I said, these slides are showing approximately the same thing here. I'm showing you for women in the ages 15 to 44, the burden of some of the different the 15 top categories of diseases based on using DALYs per 1,000 women, and you will see that unipolar depressive disorders is actually the highest and by far, and it separates by low and middle income countries versus high income countries. And you will note that for many of them, there really isn't much of a difference between the incidence and the prevalence of these diseases by the level of economic development of these different countries. What I think is striking for you to take a look at is that 6 out of the 15 are mental health related. And that's massive. Again, looking at it from a global perspective, the incidence goes up as the disability-adjusted life years goes up as the colors get darker. This slide has to be taken with a great deal of caution because of the poor or unavailable data in the countries that you see in the lighter colors. But the point being that they are in existence in those countries. So we looked at it globally. Now we're looking at the Canada. 20% of the people will experience at least one mental illness in their lifetime. The economic burden is massive, $51 billion. This is for Canada. It's the second leading cause in the age groups of 20 to 44 for hospital admissions. And people often think, well, at least people don't die from mental disorders, but in fact, they do. 4,000 individuals per year in Canada end their life through suicide. And I'm not yet talking about some of these conditions being risk factors for physical disorders. Etiology up to, this is an important finding and one that I put the words up to because lots of people quote saying that 75% of mental disorders start in childhood or young or adolescence. I'm not convinced that that evidence is as accurate as that. However, it is high. And as many as 3 out of 4 children and youth with mental health problems do not have access to services or treatment. And so the opportunity of being able to intervene at a point in time where maybe the trajectory of these young people could change dramatically in terms of their lives and the cost to society is great. And you'll see in a few moments, I'll show you another slide with some data about the department. More than 50% of individuals who experience one major depressive disorder episode will suffer from a recurrent. And the genetics are up there. There are many people working on this. The gene-environment interaction work in this field has been going on forever. I would say that some of the comments earlier in terms of occupational and environmental health, people working in psychiatric epidemiology have been the nature versus nurture, and their interaction has been going on for the past 100 years in terms of the base foundations of this type of research. So I'm going to give you just a few bits of data about our department, because that's what I was asked to talk about. And so we did a little study. The databases were the Departmental Student Database and eScholarship Database. So when you submit your thesis, now it's immediately electronic, but actually the library had gone back and digitized all the theses, or most of the theses we'll discover in a moment. We looked at each thesis, we looked at the title, and we analyzed both the title and the abstract, and we looked for search terms, and so we actually classified other categories as well, not just mental health. But for mental health, I'll just give you the search terms, were either mental health or mental illness or psychiatry, basically trying to be as over-inclusive as possible. We preferred erring on the side of generosity in the sense of seeing just how much work has gone on in the department in this area, and we looked at both outcomes and as risk factors. So these are the theses completed by years of admission and by degree in the department. A total of 670 if our database is accurate, so that is our denominator. And the the x-axis shows you the years from this academic start of the academic department. So in 1969, first we only had a master's degree, and so you see that there are just a few. And please note this is by year of admission. So the last three columns look like, oh my God, there's been a drop off, but in fact people haven't had a chance to complete yet, especially for the PhDs. So just, you know, not to worry. Actually, those numbers are going to be high as well. So we categorized the 647 theses that we could find in the database, and we will now go back and try and figure out what happened to the 23 that are not in the electronic database in terms of the abstract, the full thesis. So at least we got something out of doing this work. And show you that 42 out of the 647 fit into those categories of the search terms that I said. So being very broad, And you can see that clearly cancer is twice as frequent. Infectious diseases is 2.5 times as frequent. In infectious diseases, there are 37 tuberculosis-related, Madhu, you'll be very proud. And if we combine the 37 and the 51 for respiratory, I'm just pointing this out because I think it'll nurture the discussion later on. So it just gives you an idea as to what has gone on. And other that was corrected, I don't know what happened to it. It is biostatistics and other. So when biostatistics topic touched on any of those areas, it actually got, even though it was a methodological thesis, it still got categorized by the subject domain. So we wanted to take a quick look because of some of the conversations that are happening as well on the categorization of these theses, not just by subject area, but by type of research. And you will see that predominantly the research has been etiological or related to treatment or diagnosis. What you see in yellow is the proportion, not the proportion, the number of theses in those different areas that are related to health services research or measurement, so instrument development and areas of that domain. And I don't see striking differences except for the neurological disorders in terms of, but again, the numbers are small, and so it may be nothing more than just variation. So then we compared the number of completed theses on a mental health-related topic over the years, and this combines both masters and PhDs. And you will see there's been an increase from 1980, where there was just one, to 2010. So these are completed theses. This is not the number of it, whereas before we were looking at admission, these slides are all about the completed theses. And there'll be several more forthcoming because I do know that there are students working in the department on theses related to mental health. Within the mental health area, you can, again, differentiate where people were doing some of the focus of their research, whether it was diagnosis and measurement or etiology, treatment, a little bit on health services research. And this mirrors what we know in terms of the psychiatric epidemiology that has been being conducted over the past 40, 50 years across, I would say predominantly England and the UK and the United States and in Canada as well. But the issues, because of what I was mentioning before, there's no lab test, so diagnosis and how to measure and how to define has often been a major focus of the work in this field. If I look at it by the types, again, now we're looking at the 42 theses in the department, about 50% are under what is classified as common mental disorders. That's anxiety, depression, Alzheimer's is in there. Severe is reflects psychosis and drug abuse. And then as a risk factor, so almost a third of these theses used a mental health condition or any of the search terms that I said as the risk factor for a physical ailment, for the use of health services, et cetera, et cetera. If we look by age group, only 12% among children and adolescents. Now remember what I said before, that up to 70%, even if we err on the side of caution and say 50%, start early in the life course. We're not doing very much where that's concerned, or we haven't done very much. In 2001, WHO, based on the evidence and the cries for this evidence worldwide, basically came up with this Mental Health Global Action Program with a trajectory of different types of research initiatives that needed to be developed across different countries, better information for better decisions, advocacy against stigma. Stigma is one of the things I haven't even mentioned, but it's a very important topic, and all the way to enhance public health research capacity. Just very quickly, just to show you this in terms of the funding that's gone into this field, and these data are a little bit older. They're from 2002, 2004, but you've got the UK, the US. I don't know how to use this. And you see that the proportion of funding that is being spent on these disorders is low relative to the burden of the disease. So on a happier note, as you know, the Canadian Institutes of Health Research, CIHR, several years ago came out with their initiative for SPOR, the patient strategy for patient-oriented research, and the first funded SPOR is actually in mental health. It's a multidisciplinary project with six sites and across Canada. It's a network of investigators with very different disciplines, and the purpose of this project was really to, based on the best available evidence at this point in time, how can we best organize health services to target children and youth and intervene at a point in time where perhaps we can have a difference and an impact on their trajectories. So we've had $25 million, and I think we're actually going to have some more, that's from CIHR and the Graham Beck Foundation to implement this new program, not new program, to implement this program on a vast scale, including an impact evaluation. We're using a step wedge design so that we can introduce things in a progressive way and be able to make some, hopefully, causal inferences. And the objectives will be to promote early identification, to provide timely access to services, and to match needs with specific interventions, and to eliminate service transitions at age 18, which in and of itself seems like a simple thing, but once children, young adults, young youth, turn 18, they belong to the adult sector, and that creates a whole other set of problems. So I just would like to thank the people who facilitated the getting this data, Laura Morrison, who's in the Masters of Public Health candidate and who is working now on access for her summer practicum, André-Yves Gagnon, who, despite all the other work that he had, responded to this plea to provide at least the denominator and the names of the individuals, and the two librarians. Here are some selected references that we use for the presentation. And I don't know why the numbers are 111, but they really should have been sequential. And I proofed this numerous times. So thank you for your attention, and I look forward later to the discussion of what the next steps can be, why we haven't done as much, and what we can do to make things better in the future. Thank you.